views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio. Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Spirit Fire Radio. It is a delight to be with you and a delight to be with my wonderful co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve.
And I'm Steve Kramer. I didn't say it. I was just so excited to talk to you this week. I know it's going to be a great show. Listeners, this whole month we are talking about something very important. And we had a really lovely show last week talking about harmlessness and really wanting to create a dialogue about something that doesn't get discussed that much, which is harmlessness. We tend to always default to harm. We have so many images and so many examples of harm in our lives. It's almost epidemic if you just watch the news or television and even sort of sense the energy in a lot of people's language these days. So Dorothy, you know, harm, the theme of this show is the pervasiveness of harm. So it would be wonderful if we just go right off the bat and talk about harm itself. Like, what is harm?
Well, Steve, you know, that's a really interesting question, because if you think back over our history, things that we now consider to be unacceptable and harmful, there were times when it was fine. You know, smoking being a very small example, smoking in public, smoking on the movies, all of that. But, you know, slavery, although there still is human slavery, but the very obvious and accepted slavery in North America. So our sense of what is acceptable, what is harmful or not harmful, has changed over time. And I think it's really important for us to remember that an international sense of what is harmful is quite recent. It's less than 100 years old. It really developed as a result of the Second World War and the Nuremberg trials, which started in 1948. And in order to try people for war crimes, there had to be an agreement as to what was okay and what wasn't okay. And so they came up with 7 principles, and some of them, like, you know, if you commit an act that is a crime under international law, then you are liable for punishment. You know, those are pretty obvious. But there were a couple that were not as obvious that were agreed to. For example, if somebody does something that is illegal or harmful at the order of a superior, whether it's in the army, whether it's in the government, whether it's in the private sector, that person is not relieved of the responsibility unless there was no moral choice that was possible. In other words, and usually the way that was translated was that if the person was going to be executed, if they didn't do it, then, you know, they might be excused for not doing it. But the 7th principle is particularly interesting to me in this whole discussion, which is complicity in the commission of a crime is a crime. So it's, you don't have to be the actor, you don't have to be the one that's doing it, but if you are complicit, or there's a concept, willful blindness, of purposely trying to not know what is going on around you, that does not allow you to be innocent. You can still be held accountable. So that's a very recent, a relatively recent way for us to begin to think about what is acceptable and what is not acceptable to us. And I think, you know, we'll talk next week in more detail about harm in how we think, in how we speak, and how we act. But I think this week, you know, we need to get a kind of a sense of the landscape of what it is that we're talking about and why it is that people behave harmless in a harmful manner.
I find it interesting that you brought up smoking as the first example, but to that in a second. I agree that this idea of was a moral choice possible? That stands out to me when I review the Nuremberg principles, because it says that you were powerless to make a moral choice, that you were powerless to change the situation and not follow orders. Mm-hmm. And so for me, a lot of times harm comes down to this idea of power. I think of Gary Zukav in The Seat of the Soul wrote a really amazing chapter. I think it's even the introduction to the book on this idea of external power versus authentic power. And he says that competition for external power lies at the heart of all violence. And he says there's ideological violence in a way of or this ideological competition of capitalism versus communism, or religious competition, Irish Catholic versus Irish Protestant, or geographical competition, the Jew versus the Arab. And we even see it in familial or marriage sort of competing for power. And at the end of the day, it leads to violence. And the cigarette made me think of, you know, in a sense, someone goes outside at work to have a cigarette because they're feeling powerless. They all of a sudden feel like the day has gotten the better of them and they need to get in a position of power. They need to get revved up. They need to actually generate some energy or some power to go back in and face the day or face the situation, which we all know is doesn't work, which is why it's so harmful. But this idea of power seems to be at the heart of violence, and this idea of that if we lose that power, you know, if we or even an overemphasis on the material world of what we have and what we don't have, if I'll be vulnerable if I lose my power, or I will be vulnerable if I lose my car, or I lose my money, I lose my house, or if I don't get enough likes on Facebook or views on YouTube. It's like those things represent power to us and represent ways that as an individual we are lifted up in a sort of selfish way, and we fear vulnerability of losing these. And it leads to this idea of like, how do I leverage or jockey for power? Mm-hmm. And, you know, he goes on to say that authentic power is actually the power to make a choice that is for the betterment of all, that to exercise authentic power is to take responsibility for oneself and responsibility for the group. So mm-hmm. I find that interesting, this mm-hmm. idea of lack versus abundance, you know, and fear, versus, you know, connection or love.
Yeah, I need to make a correction, Steve, because it's interesting to me. I guess I was a little too cryptic in my comment about smoking. It's the secondhand smoke that's the harm that was not recognized before, right?
Ah, I see.
It's not okay to just think of smoking in relation to yourself, but the fact that one can ban smoking in public places because of the harm generated for other people, that's a relatively new concept, right? It's actually not shared in all countries. But so I just wanted to clarify that's what I was meaning when I talked about that.
It makes me think of, right, we all have the right to clean air. And it makes me think of, once again, you mentioned the Nuremberg trials and the and World War II, that, you know, that led to the UN. It led to the Bill of Human Rights. We talk mm-hmm. about the Bill of Human Rights quite a bit on the show. And I think of when I hear that concept of saying, well, I have a right to clean air. You mm-hmm. smoking next to me takes away that right. And mm-hmm. it is a modern sort of concept that we think beyond that, that we've expanded that idea of what are my rights. And
yeah, well, it's not just actually clean air. I think that at the root of it is the fact that secondhand smoke creates lung cancer.
Right.
So you are actually actively harming somebody else if you smoke near them. But I think I would agree with you that that is one of the roots of harm, but I'm not sure that it's the only one, because I think there also are situations where people are genuinely ignorant of alternatives. You know, we talk about intergenerational violence, you know, where a person has been raised with violent parents, and then they in turn are violent to their children because it's what was modeled to them. So I think that's another, that's another thing. And another variation on the power thing that really came home to me in terms of people that I know is there's a woman that I know quite well who was being very verbally abusive to her partner. And when I tried to intervene, she said, this is how I let off steam. I have a right to do this. You know, it makes me feel better if I yell at somebody else.
Right.
So she wasn't thinking of it so much from a power point of view, but as, because there literally is a tension that can build up, right? If you are feeling that you don't have choices. And so she was lashing out. And then there are people, unfortunately, who really enjoy watching other people suffer.
Yes.
And it is their intention to behave harmfully.
Well,
you
have
can
to
put
say
that in power terms. I'm sorry?
The minute Jerry Springer came on television, I remember telling all my friends, this is the end of civilization as we know it. Because people enjoyed it. They enjoyed seeing this violence and even just as simple discomfort in an odd or strange situation that people were very uncomfortable. And of course, the ratings went through the roof and you thought, wow, we're really witnessing something that feels like a digression. Are we going back to gladiator times, you know, where we revel in the violence? Mm-hmm. It really is everywhere, it seems, in our environment. Mm-hmm. Dorothy, we're at a break. So
okay.
When we come back, more on the pervasiveness of harm in our everyday environments. We'll be right mm-hmm. back.
Are you ready to thread your life with intuition? Intuit Apparel can help you do just that. This is not just about a piece of clothing. This is about a movement, an awakening, and staying centered in life. Your life. Intuitive and host of the radio show Get Into It, Lynn Brown, was given this image with the intention of a clothing line designed to represent the essence of life itself. Visit intuitapparel.com now and wear your intuition with pride.
Do you feel that there's a bigger, better life for you? Is there anything holding you back from living the life you were meant to live? If you'd like to find your life's true purpose and calling, join the world's foremost authority on primal spirituality, David Karsher, in Becoming a Sun Radio, emotional and spiritual intelligence for a happy, fulfilling life. Tune in once a month to Becoming a Sun Radio with David Karsher on the Dr. Pat Show and Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit davidkarsher.com today.
Brand consultant Jen Morgan is here with Radically Distinct Radio to help you take control of your future and maximize your brand's power to produce results. Whether you're an individual trying to reinvent yourself and launch a new venture, or you're an executive trying to reposition your company to modernize your sales and marketing programs, Jen Morgan and the RAD Method empower you to play to your strengths and show up in the world as your most powerful brand. To learn more, go to jenmorgan.com. That's Jen with two N's, Morgan.com, or call 206-972-5366.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Curious about the meaning of life? Do you want to deepen your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. The school also organizes group meditations each year to benefit humanity. Whether you're just beginning to reflect on the spiritual side of your life or are a more experienced spiritual seeker, the school warmly welcomes you to join our group. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit esotericstudies.net. That's esotericstudies.net.
Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. All this month on Spirit Fire Radio, we're going to be talking about harmlessness. And on this show, we're talking about harm because sometimes in order to understand harmlessness and to create a way of living, we have to sort of identify the other. We need to take a look we need to take a clean and clear look at ways in which harm pervades in our environment. We see it on TV. We see it in movies. We hear it in language of the day. It's something to be reckoned with, huh, Dorothy?
Yes, it is. And what's distressing to me, Steve, is that the rate of violence is escalating. People may or may not be aware of that. The World Health Organization says that the past century was the most violent century in human history. Violence is the third cause of death after heart attacks and strokes. Violence against women and girls is the number one human rights violation around the world. We are surrounded by violence, not just harm, but active violence. And of course, you turn on the news, what is it that captures the eye? It is violence, the bombings, the wars, the shootings, the killings. Much, much more of that. You know, if you think about watching the evening news, do you get 50% of it focused on all of the wonderful things that people have done to be supportive and helpful to each other? Usually if that's on at all, it's just a little footnote at the end.
Yeah. If it bleeds, it leads. That's what they say.
Yes. Yes.
Interestingly enough, go ahead, Dorothy.
Well, so when we look at the media content, which we have all around us, we have both this, it's like we've almost become numb to the kind of adrenaline rush that we get from the violent headlines, the online games that have those kinds of storylines, to the point where anything that's not violent seems kind of tepid and uninteresting.
Yeah, I think there's actually there's a desire for the adrenaline rush. I think that films today, you know, if it doesn't have that smash 'em, blow 'em up, chase 'em, shoot 'em going on, we feel like we as a collective, the moviegoers of the day, feel like they've been sort of let down. Like, what happened? I think it's interesting that Wonder Woman, which is out now, they all keep talking about how this is the most sort of non-violent superhero movie, and they found ways to sort of soften the violence. Well, I mean, it was okay. The violence was softened, but it really was about us versus them. And it was really about combat from the beginning to the end. Mm-hmm. Granted, mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. I saw Wonder Woman and thought it was lovely, but it was still very much a film with an us versus them theme going on to the extreme, you know. Mm-hmm. So it is everywhere. And online gaming, goodness gracious, not only are we engaged in violence, we're learning strategy. You know, we're really getting rewarded for being violent. So that is not only is it us versus them, but there are rewards. And so, you know, you've got teens of today that are can't wait to sit down with their control, which is actually a trigger, you know, more or less. So.
Well, and the thing that's surprising to me is there's plenty of psychological research. I mean, there have been reports released about the fact that viewing violence is harmful to the person. Yeah. It presents that there are two specific types of harm that they've identified. One is it presents violence as the best solution to any kind of conflict, as opposed to negotiation, as opposed to win-win, alternatives. And then the second is that it presents the world as a dangerous place. And that itself has very, very potently negative consequences. You were talking about that that video on the shooting.
Yes.
Before we came on the air.
Very moved by that case from the beginning. And goodness gracious, does it underscore this idea of the world as a dangerous place? And
why don't you name it for our audience, Steve?
Absolutely. So Philando Castile, the video of the shooting of Philando Castile, who was pulled over by a policeman for a broken taillight, and within moments it escalated to him being shot, and was recorded by his life partner and her daughter in the back seat. And we all saw that video last summer of her really even calm at the beginning, like, why is saying, you know, he wasn't pulling a gun. So he had a license to carry a gun. The policeman pulled him over. We saw this in the video. Finally, the video was released just last week, as the officer was acquitted, or a couple weeks ago. And there's an exchange of words, which is, I have the license to carry a gun. And the officer says, don't pull your gun. Don't reach for your gun. And he had asked him for his driver's license, and he was reaching for his license, and he says, don't reach for the gun. And Philando Castile says, I'm not reaching for my gun. And he gets shot multiple times. And the officer was acquitted because in order to be acquitted, you have to fear for your life. You have to prove that you feared for your life. Well, he feared for his life because we have this notion that a black man with a gun is going to kill you, and it just wasn't the case in any regard in the situation we're in this gentleman's life. And the officer was acquitted because he proved that he was fearful for his life. So you can see that the consequences of really painting the world as a dangerous place comes down to that. You know, I need to carry a gun because the world is a dangerous place, thinks Philando Castile, and he could very well be right. And the policeman, if I pull someone over and they've got a gun, immediately I'm in a place of fear and not in a place of being there to assist or help, or, you know, as we say, as the slogan for most police, you know, for most policemen and police organizations go, that you are there to sort of ensure safety, to help and to be of assistance. And yeah, escalated to a death immediately in seconds. So really sad, really has affected me in the last year.
Mm-hmm. But it is an excellent example of how what we take in shapes our expectations and shapes how we view the world. And I know I've said this before on this show, but I would beg our listeners to be very, very careful about what you take in. You know, think about what movies you are willing to watch. Think about what episodes on television you are willing to watch.
Absolutely.
Think about what kind of literature you are willing to read.
It has an impact. And just as you were saying, you know, you had said that violence is the best solution. I feel like sometimes even for ratings that the creators of these shows think, well, violence is the best solution, right? It gets the best ratings. Mm-hmm. I had a wonderful conversation with my nephew who's 16 and he saw 13 Reasons Why, which was a film about a young girl who commits suicide. And it was on Netflix, actually a series. And he said it was just gratuitous. The violence was unnecessary to tell the story. And there's a very graphic scene at the end. Granted, this show was intended for a mature audience, an audience that was 17 or 18. And it was my belief that it was for parents, that this whole series was really to inform parents and was dramatic in this sense so that parents could realize the severity of what their teenagers and teenagers of friends are going through in school and pay attention. But make no mistake, it just goes to show that it is everywhere. It is pervasive because my nephew saw it at 15 and he said, yeah, everybody watched it. It's on the internet. You could see it anywhere.
Right.
So they
right.
all watched it because it was about teenagers of their time. And I said to him, you know, when I was young, we had the Breakfast Club. That was what talked about stereotypes and about bullying and about how we judge each other. And, you know, can we find ways to be harmless in high school? And there was no violence necessary in that very effective movie. And we all loved it. It got just as good ratings. So mm-hmm. once again, you know, pervasive in every way, pervasive in the show. The show is pervasive because everybody can see it. And there it is in your psyche. Very graphic, gratuitous images.
Right. And that actually was based on the life and suicide of Amanda Todd here in British Columbia, who was bullied online to the point where she took her life. And her mother, when that was released, her mother spoke out and said, and made exactly that point. She said she watched the first couple episodes and then she stopped watching. She said the gratuitous violence was very disturbing to her.
Yeah.
And
well,
she felt that it was counterproductive.
Yeah. Yeah. And fine choice on her part. I would hate to have seen the last episode of that series. So, you know, well, we're going to go to a break. I was just about to start up again because, you know, we really have to, we have to know ourselves. We have to observe and we have to make choices of sometimes in this day and age to protect ourselves by saying no, right? I won't watch this.
That's right.
And yeah, more on that. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
What is a brilliant culture and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough 5-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Thrive is what we experience when our mind, body, and soul operate as one. When we thrive, we excel on all levels. Thrive is the mindset that matters. It is essential to our being. Have you ever found yourself looking for the instruction manual on how to thrive? You'll find everything you need to help you feel strong, powerful, and peaceful in your own body. So don't waste any more time. Visit ThriveByJen.com today.
Hi, I'm Steve Kramer of Spirit Fire Radio, and I believe that meditation changes everything. It leads us in the direction of greater well-being, and that's a fact. I struggled with meditation for years. I understood the principles, but I found it hard to incorporate them into my everyday life. Spirit Fire's meditation practice changed that. It's called the Practice of Living Awareness, and it's taught in 14 steps. These are 14 tools that I can use in any moment, on and off the cushion. Steps like smile, flow, and ground of being support my clarity of mind while I'm navigating the ups and downs of modern life. That's why it's called the Practice of Living Awareness. If you'd like to add meditation to your daily experience, The Practice of Living Awareness is free, online, and it's suited for any level of practitioner. Visit spiritfire.com for more information. And be sure to check out Spirit Fire's meditation retreats in Western Massachusetts. It's all there at spiritfire.com.
Get ready to experience Truth Talk Radio with host Deb Acker. Tune in to Truth Talk Radio each Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com to illuminate the truth in your daily life as you experience life, love, and abundance from a whole new perspective. This hit show will leave you feeling lighter and bring you into a place of infinite possibilities every day in every way. Visit TruthTalkRadioShow.com for upcoming transformative topics and guests.
Tune in to the hit show, Mouthing Off with Chef Rossi. Chef Rossi mouths off about different subjects in pursuit of breaking down walls and opening up your minds. She and Dr. Pat banter back and forth, taking from the headlines of the day on subjects that reach beyond what goes on in the world into your hearts. And go to theragingskillet.com to find out more and let Chef Rossi know what's on your mind.
Welcome back to Spirit Fire Radio. All this month, we are talking about harmlessness and ways to generate harmlessness in your life and thereby just creating a better world for us all. Dorothy, there was the segment I really enjoyed in last week's show was talking about this spiritual principle that seems to be common in almost sort of every religious tradition, which is do unto others as you would do unto yourself. And in that segment, you listed some really wonderful quotes from spiritual texts that all say this, have this same idea, that basically say, this is it. This is the law, that you've got to learn this first. So, you know, do unto others as you would do unto yourself. If you're harming others to some degree, you are harming yourself, and that can come first from you. You know, where you have learned a behavior, whether it's self-criticism or even just physical harm, that you're harming yourself in some way, and then that in turn gets reflected into your world. Sort of intention. You know, if we have a harmful intention toward ourselves, sometimes we will have a harmful intention towards others. So we really need to take a look at ourselves and ways in which we treat ourselves.
That's true. And one of the ironies of the golden rule approach is it assumes that we do treat ourselves well. And we don't necessarily. There are many ways, as you said, the terminology, the way that we use, the ways that we deal with stress can also often be very harmful to ourselves. But I'd like to give just a couple of examples that I give in my book, Positive Harmlessness in Practice, about how harming others does literally harm ourselves. So these are just three examples. So the first example, think of a time when you felt mistreated or abused by someone else and wanted revenge. Recapture that vengeful feeling. Now look in the mirror. Do you see a pleasant face or one where your eyes are strained and the face is gaunt? Take your blood, take your pulse, or even better, your blood pressure. Has it risen? Because usually it will have. Here's a second example. Think of a time when you felt you definitely got the better of someone else. For example, you cut ahead of them in line, or you snatched the last item out from under someone else's outstretched hand, or you grabbed the last parking space just before someone else tried to pull in. Recapture your sense of triumph and disdain for the other party. Now check your body. Are you relaxed or tense? And try your blood pressure again. And the third example, think of a time when someone told you juicy gossip about someone you disliked. Recapture your sense of pleasure at that third person's humiliation, the sense that they deserved it. Again, try looking in the mirror and checking for tension in your body, and try your blood pressure once more. So, Steve, you know, as I read these, these are all things that I know are not good to do, and yet I can think of times when I've done them.
Yeah, yeah.
And these are ways in which we harm others, and they are illustrative of the fact that in the process, we ourselves get harmed.
And, well, first I want to say that I really appreciate that exercise. And certainly we all can go through that and find a time very quickly that we've bum-rushed a parking space or but yeah, we've heard juicy gossip and celebrated because actually we don't like that person. We all can relate to that. But I love that that is throughout the book, just to listeners. This book, Positive Harmlessness in Practice, is actually loaded with these wonderful exercises throughout the book that give you pause. You know, you can read. There are a lot of statistics. There are a lot of wonderful stories and observations and facts. And then when you can actually reflect in ways that these have affected your life or your life has been affected by this, it becomes very meaningful on a personal level. And I find that that's when you really can start to integrate ways to be harmlessness and put it in practice in your life. So, you know, if you get the book itself, it's got all of these really wonderful exercises throughout. So listeners, again, it's called a Positive Harmlessness in Practice, part of a series called Enough for Us All by Dr. Dorothy Rill. Beautiful little plug there, but I want to go back to this, Dorothy, and plug for, because I love this book. It's such, there's so many bookmarks and earmarks in this book. But, you know, what I love about those examples is saying to look in the mirror, you know, check your body, look in the mirror. And I think you would not only find that your blood pressure has risen or has risen or that you have tension in your body, but you might, if you go deeper, even sense that if there was a time you someone told you juicy gossip and you celebrated that because you dislike this person, when you look in the mirror, if you really sat with yourself, you might find that dislike really surfaces, that notion of dislike, and that actually much of it is that you dislike yourself, and therefore you're sort of creating leverage in a way. You know, you're expressing that in the outward world and finding a way to feel better about yourself at somebody else's expense. But at the core of that is that perhaps you just don't like yourself. And, you know, we have to start there. You know, so many times we mentioned that in the last show that it really does always come back to me, me, me. But sometimes that's where one has to start, is really observing themselves and saying, well, okay, what part do I play in this? And often it's how is the way I'm treating myself and my own image of myself or self-talk? How do my energy becomes, you know, thoughts become things and energy follows thought. So often if there's really a cycle of dangerous self-criticism or lowly thoughts about oneself, it just comes out in our everyday lives.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And I think that there's a particular thing that a particular dynamic that can help us, and that is to be aware of whether we treat ourselves and by extension others in terms of whether we're perfect or not, you know, is something right or wrong,
yeah.
Or do we view life as a whole process of experimentation where we are learning as we go, and the only way that we learn is by making mistakes, trying something, have it not work, you know, look at it. And if we take that kind of attitude, we're likely to be kind to ourselves and then by extension kind to others.
Yes, and that it's all data. You know, I would add that every experience is data. You know, it's just data. I had a friend who was very, very, very successful, worked very hard, wonderful family. And he would often work overtime, work nights, and just to provide and have a wonderful, very, very materialistically rich. And that's not to say that's bad, but his life was wonderful. And as his kids got older, one went to college and one was in high school. And his wife said that she was going to pursue a career in graphic arts, that creative side of her she wanted to explore. And he got very upset. And we had many discussions about this, that, you know, at first, you know, does the world need another graphic designer, was his response. And sort of this idea of like, do I not provide? I've provided so much. Why is this? And actually what she had been saying to him all along was, listen, you know, you have provided so much, and that really this is a time where our kids are off to school. They can take care of themselves. My extra work means you can work less, and I can explore this side of myself that will bring this creative aspect back to my life, and I'll be fulfilled. We can spend more time together. But he didn't hear any of that because he had a negative self-image of himself, and he just always felt that he had it to provide, that he wasn't. At the end, when he really got down to it, and as you would say, looked in the mirror, he saw that this came about because deep inside he felt he was not good enough. And he was able to see through that through a lot of discussions and a lot of their openness. And actually, it's like that data and experimentation, that it wasn't an end all for them. They both learned a lot, but there was quite a bit of harm done in that situation till they sorted it out. And he realized that, you know, could ask himself, why did her decision affect me this way? But it had so much to do of negative self-talk and a negative self-image. And she really helped him with that. And then it ended in a her with a beautiful new career and him not working so much. But it all came down to that. You know, there was harm done to their relationship for a little while because he had done so much harm over so many years by really a lot of just harmful self-imagery. So we got to look at ourselves for sure.
You bet.
Dorothy, go on.
I have a feeling we're at a break.
We are. Do you hear that pause in my voice?
Yes.
We're going to take a break. And when we come back, a bit more about the pervasiveness of harm and ways that we can undo that perhaps in our everyday lives. We'll be right back.
Gifted intuitive healer and spiritual teacher Sarah Luce brings her unique style to the hit show Small Steps, Big Breakthrough Radio on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in each month as Sarah turns reality on end and shows us how to experience expansive results with simple yet powerful steps. Expect an enlightening bend on what you currently believe is possible. For show details and upcoming topics, visit SarahLuce.com. That's SarahLuOS.com.
Awareness is universal. Establishing a living awareness through meditation brings peaceful, healthy, and creative well-being into your everyday life. The practice of living awareness, Spiritfire's own meditation practice, is built on this belief and is designed for every level of practitioner. Each year, Spiritfire hosts living awareness meditation retreats that allow you to explore the practice in depth at our retreat center in beautiful Western Massachusetts. Introduce yourself to meditation and the practice at the Foundation's retreat. Attend, in silence, a silent meditation retreat focused on mindfulness, presence, and nature. Or be engaged with the meditation sittings themselves at the Deepening Retreat. Start adding to your awareness and attend a meditation retreat designed to cultivate consciousness in your everyday life. For details on attending a Living Awareness Meditation Retreat, visit upcoming events at www.spiritfire.com.
Are you feeling stagnant or blocked in your love life, career, health, or finances? Experiencing difficulty focusing or setting and achieving goals? Tune in to Spiritual Diagnostics Radio with psychic visionary healers Carol Dorian and Justice Welling. Discover the cause and effect of unwanted patterns in life. Tune in every Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit spiritualdeed.com.
Be you plus live your purpose equals joy. That's the motto of Unstuck Joy with Vicki Todd. Vicki believes you were born with gifts that are meant to make the world brighter. Each show will feature an art visioning journal prompt to help you create your way to soul clarity. If you're ready to get unstuck and create more joy, this show is for you.
Tune in every month on Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit VickiWorldArt.com.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life. Each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Welcome back, everyone, to Spirit Fire Radio. Steve Kramer and I are with you, talking with you about the pervasiveness of harm. This is part of our month-long focus on harmlessness. And before we leave you today, we want to spend a little bit of time on the weakening of our moral compass. We've talked before last month about the importance of a moral compass, of having a sense of what is in the common good. That's what guides our behavior. And our moral compass is strengthened through the practice of harmlessness, which we're going to talk more about in the rest of the month. But it is weakened when harm is modeled as acceptable. And I just want to share with our audience, Steve, there was, to me, an absolutely exceptional episode of the Rachel Maddow Show on MSNBC on June 30th. If you have a chance to go back and see it, if you didn't see it the first time, Rachel spends the first 15 minutes talking, really giving us a good feeling for how this moral compass gets weakened. And she talks about how all politicians have methods of distracting attention from something they don't want to talk about over to something that they do want to talk about, but that the current U.S. president has a qualitatively different way of distracting, and he does it through being deliberately abusive and disgusting, by being bullying. And the consequence is that under normal distraction tactics, you can decide whether or not you want to be distracted. But when he is so obnoxious, so repugnant, so bullying, then you feel compelled to respond. Because if you don't, then it's like you're acquiescing. You're saying that it's okay. And so he has the ability to literally pull the attention of his audience from that other topic over to what he is doing. And he enjoys the attention that he gets from being repugnant. And then she gives an excellent analysis of how the negative consequences don't accrue to him. They accrue to the office of the presidency and the standing of the U.S. in the world. And the attention, which is what he wants, he internalizes. And so he does get that benefit. It is the best analysis that I have ever heard of those kinds of that kind of bullying tactic in terms of being aware of what happens. Then she goes on to note the three very important news items that he managed to distract almost everybody's attention from that occurred during that time. So, Steve, this, I think, is a really important example of the weakening of how our moral compass can become eroded and weakened based on the behavior of people in positions of authority. And in fact, Senator Ben Sasse has said this last week that Trump is weaponizing distrust, particularly of the media. In other words, he's sounding an alarm in terms of the long-term effects of this kind of behavior.
And I appreciate that when you talk about the weakening of our moral compass, it is the weakening of our moral compass as a nation, as a humanity, and not only the moral compass of those who are almost called to respond to the bullying, right? You know, it's not just that it brings out that sort of that if you've got even an inkling of horrible behavior, it's going to arise as a result, because you know his actions create that instantaneous emotional reaction, and you quite literally react instead of responding, and it just brings that forward. You mirror it back to him, and then he uses it against you. So it's not only, you know, and your moral compass is deteriorated as someone who's on the opposite side of such a sort of a megalomaniacal bully. But as you say, it's the moral compass of our nation, of the free world and of humanity. If you really, yeah. I don't think I'm often saying that, you know.
Well, and the most recent Pew poll shows that of the world leaders, Trump is at the bottom in terms of the percent of people who feel that he has the best interest of, you know, of the world, with Angela Merkel, Chancellor Angela Merkel, being, you know, at I think 46% saying that she is the best at doing that, and Putin being at 27% in comparison to 22% for President Trump. So people seeing Putin as even as a stronger moral leader than the U.S. president. It's really stunning. But the thing that disturbs me the most about this is that young people, anyone really of any age, watching this behavior, what they may not be aware of is that the more you see this behavior occurring, the more it begins to normalize. It wears away your alertness and your attention. You start to think that it's okay, or it's not so bad, that kind of thing.
Well, and you're just quite literally distracted from any kind of meaningful conversation about meaningful events in the world. It just lowers the bar to be dealing with such childish and irresponsible behavior that it takes up all the time and space. There's nothing left, as you say. It's a way to keep us from really looking at what's going on. And that's what's kind of scary about it at the end. But hooray for Rachel Maddow, you know, hooray. Number one, right? She's the number one in cable news.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Hooray for her to really to always come on air with such wisdom and clarity.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen that April 30th show, really try to, you know, you can find it online. It's an excellent analysis. And it just, you know, it underscores the fact that we're in a very unusual period of time, I think, Steve,
right,
where, I mean, we began this show with the pervasiveness of harm, and that's been true. I mean, that was true before we got a new U.S. president, before we went into the last presidential campaign where this kind of behavior started to be shown very regularly. But now we have this being modeled from the top, and that is very disturbing. So it puts us more on our mettle that we have to be very, very careful about how we behave and what we pay attention to.
Our choices, indeed, be very aware of our choices and the choices of those around us. You know, if the president reflects, the mood of the day, then indeed we need to keep our eyes open and do all that we can to treat others with respect and dignity and gentleness and kindness and non-harm, for sure. Well, Dorothy, that brings us to the end of our show on the pervasiveness of harm. So we're going to continue this discussion for two more weeks, talking about harmlessness. And I look forward to it.
Me too, Steve. It's been great being on air with you today.
Wonderful. So, listeners, if you would like to have a look at our organizations, both Dorothy and I are cooperating on this endeavor. Our organizations are in creative cooperation to bring you Spirit Fire Radio. Spirit Fire is at spiritfire.com. schoolforesoteric.com. And Dorothy, the School for Esoteric Studies?
The School for Esoteric Studies is at esotericstudies.net.
Wonderful. So check out our organizations and please be with us next week as we continue this discussion on harmlessness. May it be so that you witness it very much between now and then. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.